Welcome to the Nordonia Hills Branch Library podcast on nonfiction, a discussion of nonfiction specifically and reading generally. This month's podcast, Connections. Well, we are back from our one-month break, our sojourn to the south of the United States, stopping at various places, including Monticello and Mount Airy, North Carolina, which you may know from your TV watching as Mayberry. And one of the high points of the trip, both literally and figuratively, was a stop at Biltmore Estate, right outside Asheville, North Carolina, in the western part of the state, in the mountains. Biltmore is the largest privately owned house in the United States of America. It was built in the 1890s by George Washington Vanderbilt. Biltmore's architect was Richard Morris Hunt, who was also notable for the design of the pedestal for the Statue of Liberty, as well as the Great Hall at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City, among many, many other commissions. The gardens and grounds at Biltmore were designed by Frederick Law Olmsted, a renowned landscape architect, probably the most famous landscape architect in American history, who was also responsible for the design of Central Park in New York, as well as the landscape and grounds of the Chicago World's Fair of 1893. Over the years, the estate has hosted more than its share of notables and celebrities, including at least six United States presidents, and authors such as Edith Wharton and Henry James. It was that idea of one place being a locus or a meeting place for so many different notables that provided the spark or the genesis for this month's topic. I have always been a sucker for those kind of random happenstance stories where people who are currently celebrities or who would go on to fame and fortune randomly meet somewhere or interact. So over the years, I have read stories such as the different attendees at that aforementioned Chicago World's Fair in 1893, one of whom was a father who lived in the Chicago area. He went home and told his sons all about the wonderful glittering white city and all the amazing things that you saw at the World's Fair. And later on, one of those sons went out and built his own glittering city out on the coast. We called it Disneyland. For the father was Elias Disney, and the son, of course, was Walt. Or the story of the woman who survived not one, but two sinkings. She survived the sinking of the RMS Titanic in 1912. Then, a couple years later, the sinking of the sister ship, the RMS Britannic. And before either one of those two ships went down, the same person, Violet Jessop, was working on board the third ship in the line when it collided with a British warship south of England in the Channel. This one woman had served for the White Star Line on all three ships and survived the sinking of two of them. By the way, she wound up living until 1971. So with these stories in mind, and provided by the impetus of a visit to the Biltmore Estate, this month's book is a compilation of 100 of these stories. To be exact, 101. The book is called Hello, Goodbye, Hello, A Circle of 101 Remarkable Meetings. The author is Craig Brown. The idea that the author got for this book was to show the meeting between two different celebrities, or historical notables, and then to form a chain of these meetings, sort of like going around a circle. So, for example, part of the chain features Winston Churchill interacting with Laurence Olivier. The next chapter is Laurence Olivier interacting with J.D. Salinger, and the chapter following is J.D. Salinger interacting with Ernest Hemingway, and so on. At the very outset of the book, the author pens a very clever note. Quote, "Everything in this book is documented, nothing is invented. When accounts of the same meeting differ, as they almost always do, I have sided with the most likely." But then here's the kicker. To lend a pattern to a book that revolves around chance and to insert a note of order into the otherwise haphazard, I've described each of the 101 meetings in exactly 1,001 words, which makes this book 101,100 words long. The acknowledgments, prefacing quotes, notes to the U.S. edition, the book description, the author's biography, and the list of my other books each consists of 101 words, as does this note. This is a very fastidious author, and if we are to believe his claim, which I'm tended to do so, he has pulled off quite the clever trick. I'll share a few of the encounters that are listed within. The first chapter is entitled Adolf Hitler is Knocked Down by John Scott Ellis, which happened in Munich in August of 1931. John Scott Ellis is an Englishman, 18 years old in 1931, visiting Munich so he can try and bone up on his German and a bit of European history and culture. He is staying with a family there in Munich and has been there for less than a week when he decides to buy himself a small car to tool around in. When he's tooling around Munich on a sunny day in his new bright red Fiat, he makes a right turn. A pedestrian who is crossing the road walks directly into his car, meaning the pedestrian hit the car, not the other way around. The pedestrian is shaken and down on one knee, but is otherwise unhurt. Luckily, Mr. Scott Ellis had his German host in the car with him, since the Englishman knew not a word of German to that point. The pedestrian is in his early 40s with a small square mustache. He brushes himself down and shakes hands with both John and his German host, who both wish him well, and they go on their respective ways. As they're driving away, the host, Mr. Poppenheim, asks John if he knows who that was. And John goes, "Of course I don't. Who is he?" "Well, he's a politician with a party, and he talks a lot. His name is Adolf Hitler." Over the years, John, the driver, tells this tale of his unexpected brush with Hitler. To hear him tell it, quote, "For a few seconds, perhaps, I held the history of Europe in my rather clumsy hands. He was only shaken up, but had I killed him, it would have changed the history of the world." Another story related in the book, which involves both a chance encounter as well as automobiles, is Alec Guinness's encounter with James Dean. 1955. James Dean is sitting at his table enjoying dinner at his very favorite little restaurant in Hollywood, the Villa Capri. At a glance toward the entrance, he notices that the actor Alec Guinness is standing there waiting to be seated. Mr. Guinness, who at that point was not yet Sir Alec Guinness, is turned away because the restaurant is full. James Dean jumps up, runs out the entrance, and flags Guinness down as he's walking away from the restaurant. Dean offers him a seat at his table since there is space available, and Guinness, who is famished, gratefully accepts. As the two of them are walking back towards the restaurant, Dean takes the opportunity to point out his new car. The car is one of only 90 Porsche 550 Spyders ever produced. Dean has had it customized, and he's very proud of his new car. Now, Alec Guinness is known to be very superstitious, and at times over the years, he has had what he would call his premonitions, which have sometimes come to pass. As he looks at Dean's car, he is seized by one of his premonitions. He asks him, "How fast can you go in that?" And Dean says, "I can do 150 in it." Guinness asks him, "Have you ever driven it?" And Dean says, "I've never been in it at all." And then according to Guinness's account, he hears himself saying, in a voice he hardly recognizes as his own, quote, "Look, I won't join your table unless you want me to, but I must say something. Please do not get into that car." Guinness looks at his watch and says, "It is now 10 o'clock, Friday the 23rd of September. If you get in that car, you'll be dead in it by this time next week." Despite this grim prophecy, Dean laughs. "Aw, shucks, don't be so mean." Guinness apologizes, blaming his outburst on lack of sleep and hunger. They have dinner together, a charming dinner, before they go their separate ways. A week later, on September 30th, he's driving his new Porsche across the junction of Route 46 and 41 in California when he collides head-on with a Ford coupe. He is pronounced dead on arrival at 5:59 p.m. Friday, September 30th. Actually, less than a week since Guinness's pronouncement. Not all of the stories have the same kind of morbid curiosity or dramatic effect to them. Some of them are quite mundane indeed. The third story in here that I'll use is an encounter between Harry Houdini and President Theodore Roosevelt, which happened on board the SS Imperator, a ship bound from Europe to the United States in June of 1914. While still 2 days out from arrival, Houdini topped the bill at a charity benefit being hosted on board the ship to benefit both the Sailor's Home and the Magician's Club of London. Among the people in the audience that evening was Theodore Roosevelt, who by 1914 was already former President Roosevelt, having left office in 1909. Houdini proceeded through his act, and then to top it off at the end, he proposed a spiritualist type of act where people in the audience could ask questions and he would have the answers on chalkboards already pre-written before the audience had presented the question. Members of the audience would write down their questions on slips of paper and they'd be put into a hat, and Houdini would draw one out and proceed from there. In addition to the ones that he was taking from the audience at random, he also approached Roosevelt directly and asked him to write down a question, which he then proceeded to seal in an envelope in full view of the entire audience, without having seen the question. He then showed the two chalkboards, double-sided, to Roosevelt and the rest of the audience and asked him, "Is there anything written on these chalkboards?" Which Roosevelt replied, "They are blank." He holds the two chalkboards out and asks Roosevelt to place his envelope sealed between the two of them, which he does. He then proceeds to ask Roosevelt, "Tell the audience what your question was." Roosevelt answered, "Where was I last Christmas?" He opens up the chalkboards and holds them up for the audience, including Roosevelt, to see. On one of the slates, there is a map of Brazil, with part of the Amazon River highlighted. The other slate contains the message, "Near the Andes," meaning the Andes Mountains. Roosevelt jumps up and shouts, "By George, that proves it," waving his arms. Last Christmas, he had indeed spent his time exploring the river in Brazil. He laughed until tears ran down his cheeks. The audience gasped and screamed in amazement. Houdini's extraordinary success is the talk of the ship. An account of the evening is transmitted by the radio operator to Newfoundland and from there to New York City. Before the ship even docks, Houdini's extraordinary feat is all over the American newspapers. The chapter following this is when Roosevelt goes on and encounters H.G. Wells, and the chain proceeds. With each chapter taking up, as the author noted, only 1,001 words, this is a quick series of stories, and you can get through this book relatively quickly. Even if you discount the whole idea of counting the words in each chapter, the whole concept is very clever. I titled this month's episode Connections, which I purloined from another author who I am very fond of, who has written a number of books in the same vein, although more in the technical and scientific sphere. This is the English professor Dr. James Burke, which some people may recognize from his series Connections, which aired on PBS for a number of years. One of his particular claims to fame was the fact that scientific discovery and technological advancement all occur because of people working off of other people's advancements or discoveries, and how everything is connected. He has written a number of books on the topic, which are all excellent, and he has hosted three separate series, Connections, Connections 2, and Connections 3, which are a series of individual episodes, and are available in multi-volume sets from the library, if you choose to watch. He is a quite congenial TV host. He is an accomplished scientist, and he is quite a good author. I would suggest both his books as well as his DVDs, James Burke. to visit the home of a famous person or to note the comings and goings or the dealings of celebrities or historical figures is something that fascinates quite a few of us. We read biographies and histories to learn more. The particular juxtaposition of these months' books provide a different approach, as it were. For when it comes down to it, historical figures, famous celebrities, are just like you and I. They're people. They have the same foibles and faults, the same habits and proclivities. They just do it on a much larger stage. Join us again next time when we'll discuss another topic on nonfiction. Until then, we'll see you at your Nordonia Hills Branch Library. Music by 20 Riverside, provided by Mevio's Music Alley, music.mevio.com. Thank you for listening.